gay-ass name for a gay-ass podcast.
Gay-ass podcast listeners, you're eating good tonight because Dylan Skips is here to dish on, yes, the stunning jump rope videos, some big life changes, and all of my invasive questions. Dylan Skips, how do you feel about being on That's a Gay-Ass Podcast, honestly?
Super excited to be here, excited to meet you, and excited to share a little bit more about my life.
Hell fucking yeah. Now, Dylan Skips, are the rumors true you were calling in from New York City?
It is true, Brooklyn to be exact.
Okay, so this is an interesting part of your lore because you post these incredible videos. And if anybody does not already follow Dylan, obviously your handles are linked in the description. You've become one of my favorites, not only because of your like charisma, confidence, the handiwork is absolutely mind-boggling. But also, like you said, we don't know a ton about you outside of your tiny shorts. We're going to get to know that. So what part of Brooklyn? Are you giving Brooklyn hipster? Are you giving Brooklyn Park Slope mom? What's the vibe?
Well, it kind of evolved. I've been here in the same townhouse apartment for 12 years. I moved here in, I guess, 2012. And when I first moved here, it was like, man, it was a little rough. I'm in Bed-Stuy, Crown Heights border.
I used to live very close to you in Brooklyn, close to Crown Heights. Yeah. And I too know the journey she's taken. Can you tell me what subway line you're off of? I don't need you to get to dox yourself.
The A.
We love an A Express.
There's the Eastern Parkway and Franklin 456 or 45.
Oh, so you're kind of close to the museum of it all.
Yeah. It's like a 5-minute bike ride over there.
Okay, gorgeous. Well, I used to love living there. I now live in LA, but when I first met my husband, I was in that neighborhood. He was in Astoria. It was a long distance relationship. We did it for 2 years, and then the rest is herstory. Now, before I ask you whose fault is it that you're gay, since we brought up my husband for a second, he went to the University of Alabama, and you have been seen in shirts with the Alabama logo. What? I'll say Roll Tide because I'm contractually obligated to. What is your relationship to Alabama as a gay guy?
It's funny. I stopped wearing that shirt because everyone thought I went to Alabama, but it was just like a vintage shirt, and thought like looked really nice. I mean, I have family and friends that went there, so I don't mind supporting it. But no, I did
You're
not
okay
go
to
there.
Politically align with the University of Alabama. No, I too have also been in trouble by wearing that merch. And when people talk to me about a football game, I say, you're barking up the wrong gay tree.
I know.
Now, Dylan Skips, I do think it's important for me to ask you the gay ass podcast question as our jumping off point, for lack of a better term. Dylan Skips, that question is, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
I've been thinking about this question a lot lately, and I don't know. I feel like I was exposed to so much like camp culture growing up with the Brady Bunch movie and Joan Cusack. But I really think it might have been the Gargoyles TV show when I was a kid. I don't know if you remember that.
I do. And I'm going to tell you something. You're breaking new ground here because the Gargoyle television series has never been brought up on this podcast.
I was wondering.
Say more, Dylan. Say more. What did she do to you?
Oh my God. I mean, you said you've seen it, right?
Oh yeah.
It's those gargoyles, man. They're just like with the huge chest and the loincloths. And there was something, you know, still so kind of camp about it. And it had like this sort of like Batman Gotham City vibe. And everyone was so hot in it, even the gargoyles.
See, I love that you're going in for the big pecs of it all, because you could have gone in either like,
I just love the sort of lore of a group of,
I don't know, you could have gone the like cartoon sort of narrative arc route, but no, you went big tits, and I'm thrilled that did that. You've always been a man who enjoys a perky breast.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Do you think that that is partly why you have grown your own?
I feel like for me that's just like the one muscle that grows easiest. My legs are already like kind of just, they have like a mass to them that I don't have to like upkeep too much, but the chest, I feel like I love the pump I get with the chest. And yeah, it's just,
if I were to call your legs chonky, would you take that as a compliment?
Sure.
You got that chonk, Dylan. Well, don't worry. Over on the Substack side, we will be talking about your chonky thighs, your big tits, and maybe if anybody has been able to enjoy them. And I will wait, though, to ask those invasive questions. No, I love the gargoyles of it all, especially because it gives us some of the lore into like a Dylan nerdy dumb as a kid. Because gargoyles is giving a little nerdy. Where geographically speaking did you grow up?
So I was raised in a military family. My parents, my dad, you know, grew up in Florida and Michigan, and my mom grew up in Pennsylvania, but I never lived in either of those places. So I was born in Germany, and then I lived in, then when I was still a baby, we moved to North Carolina. Wow. And lived out in the boonies, like the sticks. It was fun though. We had like a pasture with horses and a lot of farm animals. And I got to like, you know, explore. We had like this massive, just like forest surrounding our house. So my friends and I would go out and explore every day.
I mean, that does sound pretty magical, but I think a gay journalist would probably ask you, hold the phone, farm of North Carolina, when you were to come out, was the only non-homophobic being the horsies, or were actually embraced?
So this is, and then, so when I was, my parents split up when I was young, and my dad was stationed overseas. But then when he returned, he was stationed in Washington State when I was 12, and I decided I wanted to go live with him. So that's kind of like when I started even dissecting like those feelings, and it was much more liberal out there. That's kind of like my, when I was exposed to like real, you know, culture and art and kind of exploring that side of my sexuality. Yeah. So it was kind of a great place to move to when, as a teenager or like preteen.
Was that, what part of Washington State was it? Was it giving like a Seattle? Was it giving a gay metropolis?
Olympia, Washington.
So lesbian metropolis. No, I don't know anything about Olympia, but it sounds like it would be teeming with.
But yeah, that's where like Courtney Love grew up. And,
oh, great. Which is sort of like giving grunge, but you are presenting right now sort of straight laced, maybe dare I say prep, which is said with a huge compliment. But I guess the real question that needs to be asked is, did you come out while you were still living with your dad, or did you wait until you escaped?
I came out to my very close friends, like two or three of them, when I was 16. Because we were going to, we were like sneaking out and going to Seattle raves, like on the weekends. And, you know, that's where I was, and, you know, doing things we shouldn't have done and going to parties we shouldn't have been going to. And that's where I was like really able to experiment with my sexuality. And, you know, those good friends that I was with, they were there to kind of like see that part of me come out and support me. And I didn't really officially come out until I joined the military after high school.
Jesus Christ, Dylan, your lore is insane. Okay. So dad was military, parents split up, you move to Washington State, you graduate high school, and then you go to training camp?
Yeah. So my dad was Air Force, my stepdad was Army, and you know, I have a history of, you know, family members being in the military, but you know, my dad was very much like, I'm not going to pay for college. Like, he was very much like, I want you to make your own way in this world. And so I was kind of bitter about that and said, fine, I'm going to join the Navy, not the Air Force. But
I also really enjoyed
that the Navy had all of the places you could be stationed were just like coastal cities. Like, I would never be stuck in Oklahoma, you know?
So the gayest reason to join Navy.
I want to go see.
I wanted to be stationed in Iceland. And then the year that I signed up, they decommissioned that
station. So where were you stationed?
I went to Guam for 2 years, which was really nice, actually. I got to scuba dive like every day.
Okay, I love that. But do you also know, understand that you are kind of referencing the plot line of Book of Mormon, which is that they want to be stationed somewhere amazing and exotic like Orlando, and then they go to Rwanda. Yeah. You wanted to go to Iceland. You went to Guam. And to any of my Guamese listeners, I'm sure it's stunning over there, but were you devastated to find out it was Guam?
No, I chose it. Out of boot camp, we had like basically based on our ranking in the class, we had we took turns on choosing orders from like a list that came out. And, you know, I was like number 5 in the class of like 40 something. And so there were a couple orders to Japan and Italy, which went first. And then Guam was like one of the only other choices that was overseas. And I was like, all right. I don't know anything about Guam. I don't even know where it was. I thought it was like in South America at that time.
Yeah.
But I chose it. And no, it was really cool. I loved it. I definitely go back. The scuba diving is some of the best in the world. I mean, the island's like built on a reef. And
wow. It's so crazy to me that, you know, so many of us can follow you and yet not know so many big parts of your lore, which is that you were in the literal Navy, stationed in Guam of all places, and yet I just thought we were going to be talking about you throwing a jump rope in Brooklyn. You were in Guam for how long?
2 years. 2 years.
Damn. And then from Guam you went to
San Diego,
and you were still in the Navy in San Diego.
Yeah, 4 years in San Diego.
Jesus H. And then I'm so sorry to be quick firing questioning you, but this is so interesting to me. So 4 years in San Diego Navy, then we're still a Navy after that, or did we call it a day?
Nope. So it's funny because so my rate within the Navy was a corpsman, which is basically like medicine, like a doctor's assistant, an EMT. And so basically what you do with your duty stations, it's a rotation of green side and blue side, which blue side is Navy and green side is Marines, because the Marines don't have their own medics. The corpsmen get stationed between the two. And so after Guam, that was my hospital tour. And then you're supposed to go either with a Navy ship or with the Marines. And they were like trying very hard to get me to go with the Marines. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going with the Marines. And I just threw a big fit. And thankfully I had a chief that was, you know, this really cool, like, you know, butch kind of lesbian. And she like kind of my mentor and really took me under her wing. And she pulled a lot of strings and got me on a ship in San Diego, which was really cool because when I first got there, the ship was like, you know, just out of the yards, which is basically when they put it up on stilts and renovate it for 2 years. And so we got to go to a couple places, and then the Navy, big Navy, was like, hey, you have a sister ship in Japan that's falling apart, and I want you guys to go switch out the ship so you can bring it back and fix it. So my sea duty was supposed to be 4 years of just like constant deployments. And we ended up doing like a really cool tour at first. And then the rest of the time it was just on stilts in San Diego. So I kind of lucked out and didn't have to deploy a lot, which was great.
Yeah.
And in San Diego, I just like lived this sort of like, you know, I worked during the day and then the rest of the time I had this sort of civilian lifestyle, which was nice. And then, so to answer your question, after the Navy, after the 6 years, you know, my options were to re-enlist or to get out. And I had this this other lesbian friend who was my mentor. And she was the first person that really took me aside and said, what are you doing here? Like, and I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, she said, you do not need to be in the military. You're capable of so much more. And she really made an effort to get me into college classes and get me to start applying to schools like when my contract was nearing up. And she convinced me to apply to Columbia University because they had a really great program where for non-traditional students. And I applied to that and did a couple of tests in LA, interview tests, and I got in. And so I left the military and used my GI Bill and moved to New York and went to school here.
Oh my God, I can't wait for the film adaptation of your life, mostly because I want to find out what Broadway productions they had on that Navy ship. I'm picturing Hairspray and picturing...
Yep.
No, that's really an incredible story, Dylan. I'm blown away by your history, and I haven't even gotten into the jump roping questions. It's cool to see that you've overcome such plot twists in your life, and there's still more that we need to discuss. Over on Substack, I'll definitely be asking about some barracks stuff, because being a gay guy in the Navy must be really interesting, but also sort of fraught, if you will. But we'll wait to do that over on the other side, because I think it's important for us to get into the jump roping of it all. For anybody who hasn't yet seen your videos, you are giving us so much incredible movement. I know that you've said that you started jump roping because you felt out of shape, and it's sort of become something very different. It's changed your confidence, the way that you move throughout the world. But one of the things that I love about your videos is your music choices. You are such, you're such delicious choices. So let's do a gay ass podcast question, which is, who are your divas? Who are you listening to on a road trip? Do you have any songs you're belting in the shower? Like, what makes Dylan squirt musically?
Ooh, yeah. I do have some divas. I would say my number one diva is Sinead O'Connor. I love Sinead O'Connor.
Did I see somewhere that you share Sinead O'Connor love with someone in your family? Or did I make that up?
Oh, my mom, for sure. Yeah. My mom was listening to her albums when she was pregnant with me, and I think I just absorbed that love for Sinead. But I love Sinead, one, because of her voice and her music and her writing, but also that she was just such a, you know, anti-conformity. Like, she was so politically active and outspoken, even when, you know, it just really risked everything for her. And I love her. She's sort of humanitarian at her core.
Look at you. It's a great answer, especially because of what she stands for. And I think that you are doing something similar with your work, which is, like, you know, leaning into something that might not be a hobby of everyone, but it makes you feel the most like yourself. And I think that's what this podcast is about too, is like, just like saying fuck you to the rules of the straight world, just being who the fook we are. Who are you belting to in the car on a road trip outside of Sinead O'Connor?
I mean, really any, you know, Mandy Moore, Britney Spears, anything. Like, I kind of like take the temperature of whoever I'm with.
Well, then I'm going to interrupt you. You say Mandy Moore. I say 100%. Are we doing Only Hope? Are we doing Candy? Are we doing
Candy?
Candy, of course.
Yeah. What's yours?
My diva or my Mandy Moore?
Your Mandy Moore.
My Mandy Moore. Some of my best girlfriends in high school who, like, really saved me, we would belt Only Hope from A Walk to Remember, and that was huge. Also Cry. I mean, both Cry and A Walk to Remember, but Candy definitely was huge. I mean, she has so many. I don't know what it was about her when we were younger. Well, first of all, can I ask how old you are?
36.
Oh my God, me too. Okay, twin. So
when's your birthday?
September 21st. When's yours?
April 2nd.
So you are April, so you're younger than me. Fuck.
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
So you turn 37 next year, and I turn 37 this year. Do you think that makes me daddy to your son?
Yeah, let's go.
But no, thank you for asking me my Mandy Moore lore. I think it's really an important question for every gay guy to answer. Where do you stand on the Mandy Moore spectrum? Something else I love about your jump roping videos is simply the swag and the hand coordination. What the fook is up with that, Dylan? Have you always been able to do that? Were you born with the coordination, or did you have to grow and develop that?
No, not at all. I mean, I've never been a dancer. Like, I've never trained in dance or knew any dance moves. And I guess I just look like a goober when I'm dancing, like, at weddings, but I've always been a bopper. So, like, anytime I'm at a music show or a wedding, and it just kind of like goofy dance and Rick Astley kind of moves. But I enjoy like feeling the rhythm of the music and sort of trying to express myself through that. And I think Jump Rope was like the first time that I had like some sort of like direction to like, I guess, move my body. But like a lot of those movements are actually all the whole time I'm jumping, it's really just moving with the music. It's not planned out at all. But yeah, I guess I never really had that sort of like outlet of movement and expression that like looks coordinated until I started jumping.
No, it really looks coordinated. I mean, the way that you throw them handle bars and then keep your body. I was actually talking about you, Dylan. I'm going to be honest with you. I was talking about you when I interviewed Elliot Glazer, and we were talking about how you have this like je ne sais quoi of sort of like calm confidence that I think feels really delicious to watch. In fact, listen, if you enjoy this podcast, you're probably horny, or at least consider yourself to be a part of the horny experience. And y'all, I just read a book with a whole bunch of hornery. It is called The Dare by New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue. And if you've listened to the podcast for a while, this is not the first time I've talked about Harley LaRue. I love their work, and this book is just so delicious. It follows a former prom queen who falls for a guy she went to high school with, but it's a guy she would have never expected to go for. There's also gay representation and gay hornery, and I do think you, as a gay-ass podcast listener, would enjoy. I highly recommend you go check out The Dare, if only for the fact that Amazon banned it temporarily for being too sexy. What? So go check out The Dare by Harley LaRue, available now wherever books are sold. That makes me want to ask you, if you started to jump rope because you felt out of shape, but then you've sort of grown this amazing audience, this amazing habit, what's the biggest difference that you feel either physically or like inside? Does it make you feel more confident outside of jump roping?
Yeah, for sure. Because I feel like it's kind of been, I feel like really up until jump rope, people would, you know, praise me just based off of, you know, my looks or whatever. But like now it feels like there's something actually like worth, like deserving of that. And like something that I feel really, you know, it's just like, also, it's like I've never really felt like I've ever inspired anyone to do anything until I started jumping. And I think that's a really powerful, like when you start inspiring people, I think that's such a powerful feeling, and you really feel that and carry that with you.
Yeah. No, I think that's well said, because there is, everyone I think has something that they know they have to offer inside of them, but it's sometimes hard to tap into what that exactly is. And I think once you feel yourself tap into that power, it like actually affects many parts of your life, which I think is a good segue into talking about the life changes that you've been discussing a little bit on your page. There's a video you have where you talk about sort of the story of being in New York for these 12 years. You were in this long-term relationship, and now you're dealing with these changes with getting out of the relationship, changing your home space. And what I love about that video is that you're really pointing to something real, which is that your audience does want to know more about you. They, of course, love to watch your jump rope videos, but I think that, to your point, you are inspiring us, and it only makes us want to know more, which is why it's very fucking cool you're on this gay-ass podcast. And I know these listeners are gleeking hearing about you. But can you say more about these big life changes, you know, saying goodbye to one chapter and starting another?
Yeah. Well, so I basically, when I first moved to New York, I met my partner. It's weird because I was never the kind of guy who was always looking for a relationship. And so when I was moving to New York, I wasn't expecting anything like that. And it would just kind of happen. We met and we became sort of inseparable. And he moved into this apartment where I was living like very soon after, because his lease was up, and it just worked out. And basically did everything together and built this life together. And yeah, it was a good life. And then when I started jumping, I think things really changed because really our identity as a couple was really rooted in him, you know, creating this gallery within our apartment. And like, that was our, all of our social connections were through that life. And that's how people knew us. And and then when I started jumping and developing this, you know, persona online and social media, you know, things were different. People wanted to know more about my life. I was sort of like in the spotlight, and a lot of, I think I was ready for that because I was sort of finding this identity within myself that I didn't really, I wasn't ever really able to explore or convey. But I think it was just a lot of pressure on him. It was a big life change, and I just don't think he was ready for that. So, you know, that's kind of the big change this year. Which, I mean, it's sad because I think we both really still love each other. And it's like this really weird place to navigate. And it's hard. And sometimes I wonder if it's worth it. But I get, you know, with all the positive comments I see, and, you know, the fact that I'm really inspiring people or giving people, like, just even if it's like a video they see and it changes their mood and their day, like, I feel like ultimately that's probably worth it.
Yeah. I think when you're in a long-term relationship like that, it's very, very normal and easy to feel the converging of your lives in either in a codependence or whatever it is. And I think that when you do find more independence, it's sometimes hard for the relationship to find a different footing. I think the tough question I want to ask, and you can feel free to answer as, you know, in depth or not as you would like, but do you think that the jump roping videos, this part of your life, if you had not done that, would you still be together? Or do you think that organically you would have still found your lives going in different directions?
I think we probably would have been together because our relationship, it didn't have any like contention or like it was in a good place. I think we complimented each other with what we did. I mean, I did a lot of, I was doing commercial brokerage for a while, and then I started doing architectural renderings, which, you know, benefited, you know, we used a lot within the things we were doing together. Like he was restoring this house with his family down in Tennessee. And so, like, you know, a lot of the things we were doing, we kind of worked together on and complimented each other. And I think once I started jump roping, a lot of my time and energy were like put into that. And we started losing that sort of, I guess the
connection, connectedness.
Yeah. Like that being intertwined with all the things we were doing. And
I see. So maybe with that, maybe without that, it sort of, revealed, parts of your lives that weren't actually as connected as maybe you once thought. I mean, the thing is, I don't want you to feel like you have to explain the breakup, but I just think it's very interesting to, you know, see how the end of a relationship is not a failure. It's just a part of your life story. And I think that the way you speak about your ex clearly shows how much love you have for each other. But also I think that, you know, breakups are not a moral failing in any way. And I think that we need to normalize conversations around just life is so long and can take us into so many different places. So one thing I do want to know about your experience with this new chapter is you've mentioned that some days you feel super energetic and that you can do anything, and other days you have no idea what you are doing. Dylan Skips, how are you feeling today? What's the vibe today?
Well, I think my day is, I feel pretty successful today just in talking to you and having this sort of moment to share my story. And, but other than that, things are also really good. I'm actually in communication with a publisher right now to maybe do a book
Hell yeah.
about jumping, which would be really cool. Yeah.
Let's grow the dynasty, Dylan. Let's have Dylan skips to the TOP, bitch.
Right. Yeah, today's a good day.
Good. I'm glad. Well, you have posted about a lot of your day to days where you go to the gym, you then do your jump roping videos. So simply because the listeners might want to know some BTS, where are you filming those jump roping videos? There's a bunch of them with these cool green background. It almost looks like you're in public tennis court or something.
Oh yeah.
Where are you filming these videos?
Well, so a lot of those videos with the back, it's like a wall ball court. There's a lot of these little parks and stuff in Brooklyn and playgrounds that have those wall ball courts. And I really like filming there when I just want to isolate myself and my movements. And, it's a lot easier to do color grading and stuff when it's just a very solid background. And sometimes they have cool little, I don't know if you saw the one I posted yesterday, but there was a faded Mickey Mouse drawing that was trying to, they were trying to clean it off, but it was there, and it's really
kind of cool.
Yeah, I saw
that.
But I do enjoy just finding new locations and trying to get, these scenes set up. And in the summer, it's actually a little harder than I'm used to because the lighting plays into where I jump a lot of the times. And
so you're still a gay guy. You're still a gay guy with taste who needs to location scout. This is why the videos are doing so well. Yes, you're good at jump roping. Yes, you're hot. But you also have a masterful eye. She knows how to edit. She knows how to location scout. It's giving gay guy with many skills.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I think when I was doing architectural rendering, what I was most focused on was creating these visual stories within just the render. And so even with the jump roping, if it's just me jump roping to a song, I still try to when I'm editing it, when I'm choosing the music, when I'm choosing the lighting, it's all I kind of have this I try to implement this visual storytelling, whether it's apparent or not. But
No, it's apparent. It's twerking, Dylan. It is working. So listen, I am a Virgo with a plan, and my plan I think the plan is to ask you the final podcast question so that over on the Substack side, I can ask maybe about what dating is like as a single gay guy in New York City. Some maybe formative first kisses, maybe hookups, maybe more about the dumpy, the tattoos. There's a lot to get into on Substack, Dylan. So with that, I'm going to ask you a very difficult question. But that question is, if the world was ending and you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Remind me exactly what a character actress means.
We get it. You were in the Navy. We get it. You're super mask. Okay, so a character actress, as I define it, which many gays can argue in the comments, I say it's a woman over 40 who has worn one wig one time. What that really means is she's an actress that you can not only gush about her roles on film, but also picture yourself having a sangria and giggling throughout the entire evening. Oh. She's somebody who you adore, who has saved you, and who you want to save. Who is it, Dylan?
You've probably already gotten this so many times, but it's Joan Cusack.
Which you did mention early on. No, Joan Cusack is a great reference, and now we're going to need to know more. What is it about Joan that speaks to you?
I don't know. It's it's just the way she speaks. It's her facial expressions. It's her I don't even know if she's had to worked on being a camp actress. It's just embedded in her.
She was born into it for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's a stunning answer. I think there's some sort of dissertation we could write that links Sinead O'Connor to Joan Cusack. I don't know what that line is. If there's any sort of culture queens in the comments who want to let me know. But I don't know. You love an underdog. You love somebody who is you know, relentlessly themselves, despite the world maybe telling them that they are not in the majority. There's something that you like about a quirky queen. And I think that's really admirable, Dylan Skips. I really do.
It's my Aquarius Venus, probably.
Oh, we love. Okay. shout out. And we shout out. Dylan, I'm going to get us over to the Substack side so we can ask about all sorts of fun, saucy, close friends questions. But before we do so, will you tell these stunning listeners where to follow you and if there's anything else you would like for them to know?
Yeah. Dylan Skips on Dylan_Skips on Instagram and TikTok. And I would follow both accounts because I mix up the music selection for my videos on both accounts. TikTok, I actually post a lot more because it's like more experimental.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Love. I've linked all of your accounts in the description. Everybody go follow Dylan, follow the journey, and also enjoy the stunning music with the stunning jump rope. Ping. All right. Since you have given me the green light to ask you all sorts of invasive questions, I think the first question I would love to ask you is your first boy kiss. Dylan, was it in North Carolina on the farm where you were sweaty laying on a bale of hay? Did you wait until you were surrounded by lesbians in Olympia, Washington? Or maybe you were on a giant Navy ship tossing around in those bunk beds. What was your first boy kiss?
My first boy kiss was I think I was like 16. I was at a rave in Seattle on one Saturday night when I told my dad I was spending the night at my friend's house in Washington, and we went to this house party after the rave was over. And there was this really, really hot guy who was definitely not supposed to be kissing me. He was like 26 or 27. But yeah, I mean, that was our first kiss. And then I kissed a lot of boys in the Navy.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dreams.
Hey now.
Since I'm a dramaturg as well as a gay journalist, let's do some follow-ups here. The rave that you went to, at what time in the evening was this house party beginning? Was it like a in the middle of the night sitch?
Oh no, it was like 4 a.m.
Sure. Middle of, okay, 4 a.m., 16 years old. You said he was super, super hot. Do you remember what it was that really turned you on so much about him, like physically or energetically?
Yeah, he was kind of, he was like, he looked like he was maybe like Greek or Italian, like kind of like muscly, but also kind of like dopey. Like the way he would walk is kind of had like a little kind of like Jan Brady kind of thing going on.
A muscle Greek with a Jan Brady walk. Someone needs to make that
like
hip-hop
definitely
song.
Sort of nerdy. I think he worked at Boeing or something. But yeah, I think like things that I'm always attracted to with guys, like the little quirks, is that sort of like dopiness. So yeah, it's like if they walk a little silly or if they have like bigger ears or stuff like that.
Would you say that you are maybe a little bit quirky, nerdy inside, but you present sort of like all American bro?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I don't know how I present, but I'm definitely a little out there when it comes to my personality. I think with my friend groups, I'm always sort of the easy target to like tease.
What do they make fun of you for? Like what are some of the nerdiest things about you?
Like I think they like to tease me about like my music and film, where I just like I like to get into like things that aren't like so popular. Like I there's something about like popular music and popular film where I'm just kind of like, unless it's like some sort of like gay cult classic or you know, I'm always kind of like looking for things that are like, I want to be the first to kind of discover stuff, you know?
I see. So we get it. You live in Brooklyn. You really sort of wear that with pride. Speaking of gay cult classics, are you a drop-dead gorgeous gay?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, good. Just making sure we have.
I think I just watched it actually for the 100th time, like last month.
It's, I think I quoted just a couple of days ago. Well, you know what, Dad? Peter's gay.
Gay!
What a great cast that was. I mean, Kirsten Dunst, I just love everything she does.
Agree.
And she kind of like reminds me of like, you know, the cool older neighbor girl when you're like growing up, or like your friend's big sister. But like, what's her name? The one you just quoted.
Brittany Murphy.
Brittany Murphy, just iconic. She's another.
Rest in power. Rest in power. I mean, her performance in Clueless, I would say, was what made me gay. Another thing that made me gay. I think these listeners would crucify me if I did not go back to the Navy kissing. And so let's do that for a second, Dylan. Where did you do the most Navy boy kissing? In San Diego, or was it Guam?
San Diego, for sure. It was a small selection in Guam. San Diego was a big selection.
Did it happen at all in Guam?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And how did you get...
Mostly with, like, men traveling there that weren't in the Navy.
And so I guess now the sort of investigative questions are going to go towards Guam or San Diego. How were you meeting up with these guys? Were you on the gay apps? Was it an IRL cruising eye contact? Was it some random Navy gay message board? How were you landing the deals, if you will?
I think that was around the time of like Adam for Adam. And
sure.
There was another one. It was like Men. I forgot what the other one
Men.
Was.
Men.com, maybe?
Maybe, but Adam for Adam was the big one. Yeah.
Okay. So if any questions I ask, if you're like, I don't want to answer it, just say, Mandy Moore Candy, and then I'll keep it moving. Okay. So Adam for Adam, when you were in the Navy in San Diego, were you hooking up in your Navy bunk room, or were you going outside of camp? I don't know the words. Were you going outside of campus? What were you doing?
I would say, I mean, a lot of it was like on my own personal time when I was living, you know, I had my own little, apartment, off base and everything. But I'm sure you want to hear the, on the boat stories.
I want to hear anything that you want to tell me.
That's always the one people want to know. They're like, did you hook up on the boat? Did you hook up with other sailors? Like,
did you, For the rest of the interview, head to Substack, linked below, where you will also find chats with Colin Braun, Rich Burns, Christopher Pattison Rosso, Tyler Varvel, Sebastian Dino, Cody Silver, Johnny Sibley, Sam Altizer, and more. It's at substack.com/@EricWills. And I will see you there for a gorgeous, hairy, horny time. I love you. Bye.